This time I'd like to call the committee hearing back to order. Mr. Patterson, if you could please come back. We'd like to recall you to ask a couple more questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Patterson, for being here with us this afternoon. Hopefully we'll be able to get everybody out of here pretty quick. I do just want to remind you real quick that you are remaining under oath. We don't have to readminister that, but just want to remind you of that for the record.
Understood.
Are there any questions from the committee to start off, and then we'll get with Congresswoman Lemon regarding her question? Congressman Tillman?
No.
Congressman Maker?
No, let's just...
Okay, thank you very much. Congresswoman Lemon, at this time you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Took me a minute to get unmuted. Appreciate that. Good afternoon again. Hello, AG Patterson. It's not good to see you on a setting like this, but glad you're here with us today. Answered the call to come in. So my first question is, Mr. Patterson, have you been afforded the opportunity to come to a membership committee meeting to give a statement concerning any of these issues or topics discussed today?
I believe I came once, but I wasn't given the opportunity to speak, no.
Would you have come to a membership meeting and given a statement?
I'll come to a membership meeting, committee of the whole, anytime.
Concerning these issues we're talking about today?
Concerning any issue.
Mr. Patterson, did you hire an outside attorney to help you with this investigation into yourself?
Yes, I did. Due to the nature of the investigation, clearly there was conflict, so I had an attorney on contract and referred the matter to him.
Did you hire a personal attorney to assist you in these proceedings?
No, I did not.
And if you don't want to, I'm just curious, would you mind elaborating why you maybe chose not to go down that road?
Well, I didn't want this to turn into something too formal where I was consulting and hiding back and forth and discussing what answers I was going to provide and what we thought would be better, not objected to, but contested slightly. So I thought it would be better just to show up and discuss this matter myself.
Were you asked to give an affidavit statement like your ex-wife by the investigator that the membership committee hired?
No, I was not.
Would you have given an affidavit statement?
Well, after reading that one, probably not, no.
Do you disagree with your ex-wife's affidavit statement?
That's her testimony. I don't get to cross-examine that. That's how she remembers things. I remember things differently on a few things. So, yes, there are some discrepancies.
Are you familiar with the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Indian Affairs procedures on how they vet a CDIB application? Do you know the policies? Do you know the procedures?
No, I do not.
So you can't attest to why that was a mistake on their part?
No, I cannot.
Is there anything that you'd like to say to us, Mr. Patterson?
Well, I think there's the evidence here. I mean, the congressional report clearly says there's no fraud on my part. I submitted the application correctly. The card was issued. I didn't create or have any part in the issuance of the card. Any indication that I believe that I'm above the law, you know, that's a personal affront to my character. I would like to know what law I think that I violated that I can just get around. Because this was 10, 15 years ago, and for somebody to call this up, I agree. This is a big deal. You know, this is something that needs to be fixed. And that's why I got on it to fix once I heard about it. I don't contest any of that. When I referred to ridiculousness, I referred to the evidence as I saw it and who it came from and when it came. This came from a person who's trying to escape prosecution for something that happened at a cultural event. You know, for me, that should almost be worse than anything else because, you know, that's a sacred time. That's a sacred time for Osages to come together and interact and for a battery to take place at a cultural event. You know, I made the conscious decision, the ethical decision to file the case. And in retribution, these documents were provided that I had no idea about. I didn't know that she was still on a roll. I had no idea. And for someone to use a role, you know, that thing is the sovereignty of the nation. You know, you have no sovereignty without a role. So if there's a violation, if there's, you know, somebody that shouldn't be on there, I don't have any problem removing them. I've done it before. I'll do it again. Whoever it may be. And, you know, to use the role to investigate somebody who's prosecuting you, that's, you know, I'm a little shocked that that hasn't even been addressed. It's not an election year. This person didn't just get the role. There hadn't been an election for 2 years. So to bring it up and investigate and use it that as a weapon, you know, that's fine. But that should be part of it. That's all I got to say.
Mr. Chair, I do have one more question.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to talk about the dual enrollment, Mr. Patterson. I find that it piqued my interest. You're going to, you know, look at taking up a charge to possibly see if you can stay on the Potawatomi role based off of what you mentioned earlier, how it changed in time. And I can't say that I'm not interested to see how that would turn out. Being that, do you know anyone who has taken that charge up?
No, I have not. And I haven't even explored any further than just seeing when the Constitution changed, knowing when my enrollment was on both tribes. So no, I haven't examined the validity of that claim yet.
I find it interesting because when we started deciding which type of Indian we wanted to be for those of us that are more than one tribal blood quantum, it would be hard to have to decide if I was in that situation. So I think it's an idea that the possibility of not taking certain benefits from certain ones, but being able to still be a member because you are, in fact, you know, of that descent. So it was an interesting take on it. That's why I explored that question. And I do appreciate your comments. I do think that to get the full picture, your comments concerning how, you know, this came to light, they have merit. And I'm glad that you showed up and answered the call to the subpoena. And I wish we just would have subpoenaed more folks. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I get into the queue, please?
Congressman,
this is Alice. Thank you. good afternoon, Clint. I just have actually one question. We received a confidential affidavit from Charla Patterson, and I had a conversation last night with Congressman Tillman, and we were discussing some of my votes. And I said how I arrived to a few of my votes on something was based off of testimony. And I was a lone no vote on a couple of things. And I was okay with that because I took into consideration the testimony from a witness. And so I would like to ask you, can you tell me yes or no? Is Charla Patterson a convicted felon?
I can't tell you yes or no. I don't know the history of that.
Okay, because I have received information that she is, and that she was convicted for felony assault for strangling and beating up her mother. And if the committee can find out if there's any truth to that through their investigation, I would be interested to know that. And I think other members should be interested to know that. That is going to weigh in on what I take out of her affidavit. Because if any of it's true, I'll take zero information from her affidavit. And I'm quite alarmed if that's accurate. So I appreciate you answering the question, which you are not able to do. Okay. I too, like Congresswoman Lemon, it does pique my interest as well with the dual enrollment. Listen, this is not a question for anyone. It's just an observation. The reality is that the Department of Interior with CDIBs from the beginning of our existence with them in 1906 did not take care of the Osage people. They allowed, and we all know this, they allowed non-Indians to enroll. Non-Indians. I have no idea what their CDIB membership percent says they are. Have no idea. And at the point in time that we reformed our government, the word grandfather is a good, I guess, analogy. We reformed our government. We did not make everyone go back and prove whether or not they were truly Indian. And I don't take the same stance as other members. I believe that it is your right to, if you feel like you have grounds to be grandfathered in, to be duly enrolled in something that changed over the course of time, that is your decision. If they come back and say no, you obviously have a decision to make. But I've got people texting me right now saying, does the membership committee plan on going back to that 1906 role of non-Osages and taking us off? Do they plan to prove that? I don't have the answer to that. That's neither here nor there. But it is a question, right? As we talk about membership and the flaws that the Department of Interior had during signing up Indians. It's a real thing. They were full of flaws. So that's all I have, Chair. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Congresswoman Goodfox. Are there any other questions? Mr. Patterson, I would like to walk through this process again. An application for a CDAB card was completed in 2004. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you completed that application?
Yes.
And there was a CDAB card issued in 2004?
Yes.
Did you receive that card?
Not to my knowledge. I did. I did not personally, no.
How do you believe that card was in possession to be submitted in 2010? We spoke this morning that the CDIB card after the change in law was submitted with the application in 2010. How do you believe that card was included there?
I don't know. I didn't submit the application, so I can only speculate, but...
Okay, well, I find it a miracle that a minor in possession of a CDIB card would be able to submit an application unsigned for membership and obtain membership if the address on the CDIB application and the application was submitted by you for CDIB. I find that troubling. Regardless, you completed the February 3rd, 2010 application for a replacement membership card for yourself. Is that correct?
I assume so. I looked at my card. I've had the same card since 2004, so it does appear to be my signature. I can only assume that's correct.
So are you saying you didn't get a replacement card from your application in 2010?
I don't recall getting a replacement card, but that certainly does look like my signature on the application.
Okay. Do you recall mailing that application?
No.
But you do believe it is your handwriting?
Yes.
But you also believe it's your handwriting on the February 4th application for membership? For a minor, correct?
What was the question on the...
You do believe that it may be your handwriting on the February 4th, 2010 application for membership for a minor?
I don't know if it is or not. It looks similar.
It looks similar. Unsigned. But that card was likely mailed. I'm trying... How do you believe the card or the applications got to our membership department?
There's a return envelope, so I believe that they were mailed.
Mr. Patterson, there is a return envelope. It was mailed. We have that envelope in our documents. It's from the address that you signed a form the day before listed on your application and that you signed. How do you believe those got there?
I have no idea.
So it's your testimony that you filled out the form, signed it for a replacement card, potentially filled out a form for application for a minor, and then it magically got into an envelope and got to our membership department?
I don't know. It could have. I mean, maybe the Easter Bunny mailed it. I didn't mail it, so.
Maybe the Easter Bunny mailed it. I mean, that's fair.
We can speculate all day long.
Jane Doe was granted a membership in 2010. Did you receive that card?
I did not personally receive it, no.
When did you believe that she became a member of the Osage Nation?
2004.
Okay. And why do you believe that you potentially filled out an application in 2010 in your handwriting?
I'm not sure if I did or not. That's what I'm saying. There's no date, there's no signature.
But it is substantially your handwriting, mailed from the same address that you did sign an application for your form the day before.
Yeah. I would say ask and answer, but I know you're not going to take that, so I don't know if that's my handwriting or not.
Okay. I have no further questions. I've got some elaborations that I need to make to answer some claims. Are there any other questions from the committee? Congressman Maker.
Well, I had one, but I think you already covered it. But I just my own observation, I just find it hard to believe that these cards can just magically appear when they're kind of hard to get. I mean, when I first got my CVIB card, I came over with my father. It was a full-blood Osage. And I was like maybe 12 years old, and it was a process. But back then, it was before this new government, because that's all we had to identify ourselves as a tribal member of the Osage Nation was my CDLP card, which I've had, you know, since I was a young boy. So I just find it hard to believe that these cards that are in question here can just magically appear and no one knows how they happened. That's my, thank you.
Thank you, Congressman Maker. Congressman Tillman.
Mr. Patterson, thanks again for your time here. Going back to the citizens of Potawatomi and the Osage Nation, the dual enrollment, do you receive benefits from the Osage Nation?
Yes.
Okay, could you tell us what those are?
Vehicle tag and the health benefit card.
Okay. Did you file for the COVID stimulus?
Yes.
Okay. Do you receive benefits from the citizens of Potawatomi?
No.
You do not?
No.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Patterson, I feel that we need to answer some of the things that have been said, and I intend to do that. You asked me to point out or state where I believe that you're above the law, or where I, Sarah, I'm not going to say something behind your back. I'm going to tell it to your face.
Appreciate that.
I believe that your opinion, that you're entitled to dual citizenship because you should be grandfathered in as a position that places you above the law. I believe their constitution is clear. Article 3, Section 1 and G, that no member of the citizen Potawatomi Nation may hold membership in any other Indian tribe. Yes. I believe, Mr. Patterson, that your belief that you should be grandfathered in is a belief that places you above that law, their constitution. That's one area. I think that there are instances that you yourself have been involved in prosecuting through our Attorney General's office, relating to individuals who were adopted that have been placed on our rolls. And you're asking us to believe that at no time did you think to check somebody that you actively sought to enroll. You signed the application in 2004. You stated here that you believe that she became a member in 2004, but at no time did you think, maybe I ought to check that. I believe that that's kind of placing some thought above the law, that somehow that law didn't apply to you. I believe that. We'll get to the bottom of that. Maybe not today, and maybe we won't. Regarding the flaws, and I agree, BIA was full of flaws. This wasn't a flaw in the BIA system. We clearly see in 2004 that there was an application for CDIB that was granted, in which you provide a genealogy, that is a biological reference, to assert a degree of Indian blood. I don't think that that's a problem in the CDIB's system. I think that you signed a form in 2004 that as the result granted an individual, as you stated, membership in the Osage Nation. It for sure granted a CDIB card. And then we progressed to 2010 where perhaps maybe indeed the Easter Bunny did mail the form, but an application from your residence of address matching perceivably the same handwriting, mailed conspicuously at a certain time apart, grants membership in the Osage Nation to an individual that should not have Osage Nation membership. These are facts that we now have to deal with. That's not a flaw in the BIA system. The BIA didn't grant membership in 2010. Regarding the affidavit and the character of the individual, I don't disagree with what's been stated, but I believe that that's why we've gone through great lengths today to ask you about some of those claims. And I think that that was our job. And I think that the testimony will provide that we indeed, maybe we don't believe that affidavit, sir. That's why we ask you those questions, to verify. And I believe we got some answers there. Where I'm troubled, I really wish we maybe hadn't gone down that road. Mr. Patterson, you lobbied some claims today about the intent of how these accusations came up. Mr. Patterson, I don't know that it's been ascertained how the individual in question got access to the role. The role is a very protected document. It's handled by our membership department. I doubt that they hand it out. If we need to recall Mr. Standing Bear, I'm happy to ask him if he believes that he's ever just given the membership role out. I don't believe that that's the case. The only other entity that I know that it comes to is the Osage Nation Congress. I think it's far more likely, as have I had conversations with the individual, that it was speculation based on a public document. But yet it was asserted by our nation's chief prosecutor here today that it was a fact that the membership role had been used. Mr. Patterson, do you have any proof that the membership role is the source of that information?
Yes, it's in our email.
Be happy to take a look at it, Mr. Patterson.
Sure.
The nature of how that was given, though, doesn't change the facts that we're dealing with.
I agree.
Mr. Patterson, the Mickey Mouse, the Easter Bunny, could have submitted an application. It doesn't make it right. How that information was brought to us does not negate the severity of the claim.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay.
But I'm saying that's one part that should also be looked at. If you're tasked,
I'm not going to be lectured on my duty. I've done due diligence.
I'm not referring to you personally. I'm saying if the membership committee is tasked with the maintenance and protection of the membership role, this should have been one aspect of the investigation.
And Mr. Patterson, I'm telling you, I've researched that. I've obtained it from the individual in question. It was obtained through the voter registration roll, which is a public document. So that aside,
if you research it, why didn't the public know about it? Why wasn't that individual questioned?
Mr. Patterson, I'm not here to question how the complaint got to my desk. As I have stated, Mickey Mouse could have submitted the claim. Anonymous could have submitted the claim. It does not change the fact that your signature appears on a document that led to an issuance of a CDIB card that shouldn't have been issued. It doesn't change the fact that in 2010, an application was submitted for membership that granted membership to an individual that should not have a membership. If that came from the Easter Bunny, as potentially it may have been, it is still a severe problem. I don't wish to argue this as we're devolving. At this time, are there any other questions from members of the committee? Thank you, Mr. Tillman. Okay. Are there any other questions for Mr. Standing Bear or Secretary Bayrou from the committee. Okay. At this time, I'll conclude the hearing. Mr. Patterson, thank you for being here with us today. I do appreciate your willingness to come down. Director Standing Bearer, Secretary Bayrou, thank you for being with us today. At this time, I believe the committee needs to absorb what we've gotten today and look at a path forward. So at this time, without objection, the hearing is adjourned.